Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Micah Yott. Micah is a writer, artist, musician, speaker, and carpenter. He's written a book that details his process of transmuting trauma into healing using art, nature, and connection, entitled Evolution, Then Revolution, How to Push with Love. He has started a trauma recovery group called Push with Love on Facebook. He's also created a screenplay and graphic novel about a superhero's origin story as a raw sci-fi psych thriller called The Silent Scream. Micah has also started a nonprofit organization called All Range Combat that combats internal trauma and all ranges beyond ourselves using sound healing, group therapy, yoga, martial arts, and weapons training. And with that, Michael, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while now.
Thank you for having me.
I think we initially met, I believe it might have been through Candace Snyder. I think you were on Candace's podcast. Candace has this knack for hooking me up with potential guests who align with my philosophy, align with my background. And sure enough, when we had our pre-chat, we found out that we aligned on many levels as we see trauma recovery, as we see how trauma shapes us through a mind, body, and spirit perspective. And from there, here we are today.
Yeah, that's true. Trauma shapes us.
It shapes us, it influences us, and it transforms us if we allow it to. Micah, my first question for you is, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
The experiences when I was younger, essentially, kept me on a real straight and narrow path. I was always a church going until I was about a teenager. And then I went to school, college for music, and couldn't hang out with it. So I went into the state and I started working for the state government, taking care of the developmentally disabled and the elderly. And I did that for over a decade, and that really shaped me into a caregiver, a professional caregiver. And I experienced and learned so much from that community. And after a while, it just takes a toll on your mental health as well as your physical body. So I decided to switch up and do something else. So I went into carpentry, and I wanted to always learn how to build a house. So I learned from some professionals the ins and outs for a few years. I can do an amount that I'm comfortable with, but I definitely have more to learn when it comes to that. So I went from there into art and went into taking care of insurance. I did insurance for a while. That shaped me, kind of put me out there, because I was always kind of a hermit. I was introvert. So that kind of put me out there connecting with people. So kind of broke it. And after that, just kept bouncing around. And I found that really what it was I was just looking to see what I could connect with as far as passion and occupation or service. And these past 2 years culminated to a point where I really just have to follow art and creation and connecting with people, because these are the things that I truly love. So this past 2 years, I've kind of experienced a lot of heartache and struggle through this past experience of separation from my ex-wife and starting over financially. So this opportunity that was given to me was to kind of dive into my own traumas and my own struggles that I wasn't facing from childhood. So I did that through art and nature and connecting with people. And that's how I created my book.
And we're going to get into your book in a bit, but you know, one of the things that I was, as I was reading your bio, the things that are so meaningful to you, such as art, such as nature, such as yoga. I mean, all the stuff that we've talked about, these are holistic practices that have been proven through research to improve physical and mental health outcomes. And even spending time in nature, even 20 or 30 minutes, can provide us clarity, can provide us, you know, stress management, can provide us with just about a variety of different therapeutic effects. So how did you really just develop all of these kind of diverse practices for creation? How did you develop such a diverse holistic practice set?
I would have to attribute that to my ADHD. I feel like having the ADHD has kind of caused me just to follow the dopamine. And it was kind of chaotic because when I was younger, I would just kind of keep jumping from subject to subject to see what really was driving me. Even though it was chaotic, I was still picking up these little skills here and there and kind of diving into it. And that combined with very high-functioning form of autism, I was able to hyper-focus and go really deep into the details of certain subjects I was interested in. And this kind of combined to create an interesting set of skills that I just keep carrying with me and revisiting from time to time to further develop them.
And particularly with the diverse holistic practice set that you've developed, you can meet individuals wherever they're at, whether it's through art, whether it's through nature, whether it's just through learning how to connect with something greater than themselves, you know, providing those types of mindfulness practices. You can meet anybody just about where they're at from any background, you know, regardless of their traumas, regardless of family history. You'll have something for everybody because you've developed such a diverse mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw something on your LinkedIn profile that intrigued me, and I wanted to read this to you and have you elaborate on this just a bit. With every piece of art comes visual layers, but what I provide with my art is emotional layers. When you feel them, we are one. My questions for you, Mike, are: what does this passage mean to you personally, and how does this drive the work that you do with those seeking trauma recovery?
So something that I've always really found a connection with art is what feelings they bring out of me when I come across a piece. And if I can feel something from a piece of art, then I want to know more and I want to dive further into it. And there's always been certain artists that I've been very connected to emotionally. And I wanted to kind of, I guess, carry the torch further, kind of show my influence. And what I do with my art is similar. Because of that, I like to start off with an idea first. What is the emotion that I want to convey? I don't want to just give them, the viewer or a person experiencing it, the emotion. I want them to find it. So I try to guide them in the way rather than just feed it to them. So each piece of art that I create is kind of very subtle. It's very, what would be the right word? It's more like hint. So, or an Easter egg, I guess. Find the path and then wherever it takes you.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that we can empower individuals to take a path, but they can also empower themselves not to take it if they don't feel that it's the right time. Your philosophy reminds me of something that Ram Dass has always said, is that we're all just walking each other home. And we're just guiding each other on the path to help individuals seek their truth, whatever version of their truth that they feel is relevant to them. As a professor, and I teach college students, I tell my students, my job as a teacher is to open some doors for you that will lead to critical thinking. How far you walk in past that door, how much you take away from that, the truth that you find within that's going to be your own. It's not going to be mine. It's going to be your own. And whatever truth you find in it, even if you find no truth in it at all, you've made your statement. We need to do more in terms of empowering as opposed to being directive.
I feel like that's really where the empowerment comes from, is when you can allow the individual the space to experience on their own rather than telling them were to experience.
Because whatever consequences they experience are going to be on their own terms. It's not going to be on ours. And I think with every choice and every behavior we make, there's a natural consequence attached to it. And it's just up to us to choose wisely, but to take ownership of those consequences that we experience, particularly if those consequences don't go as we had anticipated. And I think that's also key to trauma recovery, too, is the amount of accountability and responsibility we're going to take for our own post-traumatic growth after trauma.
Absolutely.
Let's get to your book, Evolution, Then Revolution, How to Push with Love. What is it about? What do you want readers to take away from it?
So when I first started this journey, I'm kind of diving into myself and just to understand my own evolution. I wanted to kind of create this structure to approach trauma recovery for myself, just to kind of give myself a guide and to help reflect. So the first thing that I wanted to do was kind of outline, where's my goal? Where's my end goal? And how do I get there? So I tried to essentially break it down into the most simplest, most straightforward way that I know how. And I did that with my book, Evolution and Revolution. The concept essentially is just to keep evolving until we can revolt against our old ways, our old patterns, or the old ideas that we have captured us, I should say. So when I approached this, it was really, the goal was to make it as short, simple as possible for people. That way, anybody could pick it up and read it, and it would not be complex. It would not be a way to kind of, you have to memorize certain terms, or you have to understand certain terminology or jargon just to get through it. And I made it short and simple because I know for myself, I have a short attention span. So I assume that others are struggling with that as well. I needed to also create a little bit of backstory for how I came up with this process or what I experienced. And I did that in the second chapter with the book, just to kind of elaborate a little bit more on who I was as a person. And then as I go, I'm going to elaborate more in more chapters. I guess it would be extending the book into more.
Well, I think short but focused is always a good strategy, particularly with individuals in the early stage of trauma. They may not have the cognitive capability to concentrate for any period of time on extensive reads. So something that's short or focused, or where they could pick out a chapter here and there that resonates. I mean, we just read differently in the early stages of trauma, and until their body and mind and spirit gets more in sync and regulated and adapted to the trauma, they're going to just be able to take short, really concentrated chapters, or concentrated articles. So I think it's good that you put your philosophy and you put your strategies in a short takeaway book that they'll be able to comprehend and go back to over and over again, not feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, that was the goal, really, was just to kind of approach it so people don't have to kind of dive in there and highlight page after page in order to kind of remember. So my goal was to kind of adhere to the readers that they don't want something that is extremely lengthy. They want something short and to the point.
Well, the other thing that I interpreted from your description of the book is that you teach people that in trauma, behaviors that once served you are no longer going to serve you moving forward. And those behaviors are that those part of you need to die, so that other characteristics that are going to be more adaptive and help you adjust to the trauma and re-engage in life again will kind of replace that. It's kind of like a rebirth into a new existence post-trauma. And I think of the snake, the spiritual significance of snake, which is transmutation, the shedding of the skin. Shed the old, get rid of the old, in with the new. And with trauma, we have to transcend it, we have to develop new skills that are going to suit us moving forward. I firmly believe that if we stayed the same, had the same philosophies, the same behaviors, the same coping skills, you know, prior to that trauma, and nothing changed, that we wouldn't be able to adjust after trauma.
I agree. I feel like that's really what I've kind of been going through the past couple of years, and this kind of like hermit phase. It's just kind of shedding every layer of my ego in order to kind of understand who I am and why I choose what I choose or what I've done in order to kind of become who I am now. And I feel like that's really the growth phase. And then once we get to that point, now we can start the real healing because we have the perception and the awareness.
And it also sounds like you value introspection, going within, embracing the quiet to discover who you truly are. And I've heard teachers, and in fact, one of my favorite teachings in the afterlife of Billy Fingers is that everything you need is already inside of you. And I think the other part of that is that if it's already inside of us, we need to be able to sit in the quiet, value introspection as a tool to discover what it is within that we can use to create that sense of connection and that sense of community and that sense of connection within ourselves.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about Push with Love. That's a Facebook group that you have developed. You do a lot of stuff with trauma recovery in that group. So tell us about that in the context of trauma recovery and the trauma recovery techniques that you want members of that group to implement, to assimilate, or to take away.
So it's an extension from my book, How to Push with Love, because the concept essentially is I needed to revolt against my own ways of how I pushed myself and what I learned of how to push myself. Because when I was younger, I would just constantly essentially bully myself into going forward and not really slowing down, as you were saying, going into that silence and pausing to kind of reflect. Mm-hmm. I would just keep going forward. So in order to kind of change my approach, I had to look at it like I need to push myself with love and kindness and grace, give myself the ability to have grace and imperfection. So in Push with Love, the Facebook group is an extension there just to welcome people in and show them that there's a safe place to just express themselves and approach trauma in a more safe manner. It's not necessarily a place just to complain about what we are struggling with, but a place to kind of connect and relate to each other and then focus entirely on what techniques and recovery that we can use in order to get the results that we want.
So it's almost like you create an atmosphere of mutual support, for individuals who are going through challenges with trauma, creating that sense of community, which also I think facilitates spiritual growth, because I think one of the components of spirituality is being connected to something or somebody greater than yourself. And that includes community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really the first step is getting away from the self, the identity or the ego, however you wish to say, understanding that we are just a single cell in a large organism.
Yeah, I mean, we're connected by a single thread. I mean, the DNA of humanity, it doesn't matter what our backgrounds are. It shouldn't matter what our cultural affiliation is, our ethnic background, our race. We're all connected by that DNA, that strand of humanity that should bind us all together and transcend any outward differences that we see in each other.
Yeah.
You're a man of many categories and many organizations, which makes me beg the question, when do you sleep?
The irony is I love sleeping. I absolutely love it. I wish I could sleep all the time, but I can't. Because I feel like I have the most elaborate dreams. They're so beautiful and chaotic. But I love to study things. I love things that are challenging. And there's a lot of things that are challenging for me. Because even though I have all of these facets that I like to dive into, it's very difficult for me to approach education in a very traditional sense of just simply reading and writing. I have to have hands-on. I have to be surrounded by it in like a three-dimensional or four-dimensional way. It has to be engulfed in order for me to really feel it. So when it comes to like art or connection or anything really, I love to surround myself in the subject as much as possible and then get my hands on it so that I can learn as much as absorb as much as possible.
And, you know, I mean, if you're an artist, you're multisensory anyway. You're looking at the world multidimensionally. You're looking at the world in terms of not just this world, but even in other worlds. There's a strong intuitive sense with creatives that need to be nurtured. And also with young adults who have come into this time as very intuitive, very connected to spirit, very connected to other worlds, and traditional teaching methods don't fly with those with individuals who see the world very differently. And I've had students who have presented with those type of skills. So my job is to kind of, well, let me teach how they learn. And if it's more hands-on experience through more discussion, through more sensory activities, through activities to develop intuition, then so be it. That's what I'm going to do, because that's what's going to be the most beneficial learning experience for them. And it's my job as a teacher not to teach how I learn, but to teach how they learn and to be able to meet them where they're at, which is why I tell my students I'm only as good as my last class. Because if I decide that I'm just going to mail it in for one semester, then I've got 20 students who are telling 20 other students, don't take this guy for a course. And, you know, I think if everybody treated every opportunity or every speaking engagement that they had as their first speaking engagement, as opposed to and not resting on their laurels, I think, you know, you would see that type of excellence continue to develop. And also, I think you will see individuals, because they're striving for excellence, they're going to look at different ways to maintain it. Their curiosity is going to be picked, and they're going to find different ways to challenge themselves.
I absolutely agree. I feel like if you get complacent or if you get content with your own growth, that's when everything falls apart. I feel like if you don't have adversity in something, then you're not really pushing yourself to live your fullest life.
Yep. And adversity defines us as much as the joyful moments do, and even more so. So tell us about All Range Combat, your nonprofit organization. How does your mission align with everything else you're doing, with the Push with Love group, with your trauma recovery work? Tell the audience a little bit more about that part of your existence.
Sure. I feel like the one thing I've always had a dream of is joining a gym or a dojo that focuses not only on the martial arts, but the group therapy and the sound healing and weapons training and taking it a step further. So empowering people by connecting and healing, but also adjusting it so that they are safe. So it's like a way to approach growth with violence, but in a safe way. Because there's a saying that I always kind of adhere to was, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. And I always felt myself as a warrior in the garden, because I always appreciate peace. But it doesn't mean I haven't stopped preparing for war. Every day, since I was a child, I've always looked at survival as the most important thing in every possible scenario. So even though I focus so heavily on healing and connection, I feel like training our bodies to be physically fit, as well as being aware of how to defend ourselves and defend our bodies, since they are sacred vessels, from people that wish to do us harm. So that's really the focus on All Range Combat.
Yeah, it's almost like a very much of a mind, body, spirit focus, and it's equipping us with coping strategies in each one of those areas that determine our existence as a human being. You know, it makes sense in the martial arts too. And I a long time ago I took a Taekwondo course, and it was as much about the mental acuity and the mental discipline as much as it was about also the physical movements and executing the punches and the kicks. So it's really just a total form of really mental and physical discipline, I think, when you get into the martial arts. I like the fact that you have that diverse approach, and Yeah, and I think particularly in today's times, we need to be equipped to be able to defend ourselves. And I also know that you addressed addiction and depression management with individuals. How is that similar or different from the trauma recovery work that you do?
It's very similar because it's firsthand experience. So this comes from my own journey with facing my own addictions and depression. Something that I've had to deal with my whole life is different forms of addiction, which can fall in line with learning different subjects because of just chasing the dopamine. Essentially, like I said, it's an addiction. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we do have to wrangle in sometimes because it becomes detrimental to us. So I approached first identifying addictions with my book there is, how do I approach addictions? If it's helping my life or is it hindering my life? Because sometimes there are some things that we not necessarily are addicted to, but we constantly do that. It does help us, helps our lives. So you could say there are healthy addictions. When it comes to depression, it is a very simple approach. And it is, if you are living your most authentic life, then you will avoid depression. You have to first take care of your body. Like we were saying, we have to approach it the mind, body, spirit. All three of them are vital when it comes to managing your depression. And depression, I feel, is really just your body or your mind indicating that you are neglecting one of these three things. Whether it's your spirit, your connection, or it was your body is being neglected, your health, and if your mind is not being stimulated. So It's really just a side effect of these three things not being maintained.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I think with depression, there's a yin and yang to everything, but I think there's also a gift in depression in terms of that it may slow us down. It may cause us to go within and think about, you know, the greater existential questions. And also, Micah, some of the individuals who have been clinically depressed, once they've overcome that, have turned into the most compassionate, empathic human beings you'll ever see because they can touch somebody's own trauma because of their own. And I tend to reject the concept that there's either good or bad in everything. I think there's both. I think we can look at a yin and a yang and see the gift of characteristics that aren't necessarily happiness, but yet have something to teach us anyway. It can contribute to our authenticity as a human being and as our growth as a human being.
Very well put.
Micah, if there's one thing you're going to leave our listeners with today, or one thing with subcategories, I'm fine with that. What would that be?
The one thing that keeps resounding in me every single day is we have to take inventory on what is it we think about. Is the thoughts that we think about every single day, are they helping us feel more empowered or are they pulling us away from ourselves? And another thing that I would say is have grace for yourself and have grace for others. And what that means to me is avoid judgment of yourself. Don't judge yourself because you are more than what labels society puts on you so that you cannot judge other people because everybody is struggling with something and we have to have patience with that.
And sometimes it's difficult to have patience with other individual struggles because of what's going on within us. Or, you know, there just may be other times that an individual's own trauma awakens some unresolved issues with us that we need to deal with. But regardless, acknowledge it, become aware of it, deal with it, and show grace to yourself in the process. And don't beat yourself up because you're imperfect.
Yeah, that's most important. Appreciate your imperfection.
Absolutely, because our imperfection is information. It can give us information that can help us grow. So therefore, we should embrace mistakes as opposed to denying those mistakes or running away from them. So my last question for you is if people want to get in touch with you, purchase your book, contract with your services, what's the best way for them to do that, Micah?
I would say to go on to Facebook and join Wish With Love, the Facebook group. It's the easiest way to stay connected with me. I also have a website, thesilentscreams.com, which is mostly for my graphic novel series. So if you're interested in that, that would be a great way to stay connected.
And as far as Revolution, then Revolution book, that's in bookstores. That's pretty much on, you can get it on Amazon as well, too.
You won't be able to find it on Amazon at the moment, but I do have links on my Facebook to get to it. I also have other links from on YouTube and other social media. So it's very easy to find if you find me on social media.
Okay. And I'll make sure your social media contact information gets into the episode notes, both on YouTube and on the podcast platforms that I subscribe to. So, Micah, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.